you have to speak up, because if you don't do it before your marriage, when will you actually do it? And if you're not going to support your partner through this whole beginning phase, then in the future, it's just going to get harder.
Hello and welcome to the Connect 2 Marriage Podcast. I'm Jo and I'm your host for this episode. In each episode of the Connect 2 podcast, we'll be tackling questions that couples ask about marriage, communication, conflict, intimacy, in-laws, outlaws, and much, much more. We hope you'll keep tuning in to learn with us as you grow closer, deeper, and stronger in your marriage. Now, did you know that in 2023, almost a fifth of all marriages in Singapore were inter-ethnic unions? That amounts to almost 5,000 couples a year. And so today, we are going to explore the unique opportunities and challenges that come with interracial marriages. And we'll share some practical tips on how to build a sense of oneness, unity, and also, of course, by extension, the strong community around the marriage unit. And to unpack our topic today, I'm excited to welcome back into the studio Jason and Mariko. Now, just by virtue of their names, you might be mistaken like me and you don't have the opportunity to see them face to face. But I actually thought that, you know, Mariko was the one who is non-local and non-Singaporean, but actually Jason is the one. Okay, so welcome to the Connect 2 podcast, Jason and Mariko. Maybe you can share a little bit about yourself so our listeners can know you better.
I'm Jason. I was born and raised in India. I was born in the city of Chennai. I was born into a Christian family, grew up as a Christian, and then finished my undergrad there in Bachelor's in Engineering. And after that, I was in IIT for about half a year. When I was there is when I applied for NUS, and I got a scholarship from MOE here to do my master's at NUS and a total scholarship and Master's of Engineering in Mechatronics. And that's how I came here. And then when I was comparing between doing master's in India and Singapore, I think my parents were also very encouraging to ask me to go and venture exposure in another country and see if I could build a better future for myself there. And with all that encouragement and my desire to also grow and venture out is how I landed in Singapore, finished my master's, and I've been working now for about 11 years.
And you landed a local wife too.
That's the biggest blessing, staying in Singapore, yes.
And congratulations, now you're a full-fledged Singaporean.
Yay.
Okay, Mariko.
Yeah, so I'm Mariko. I was the one that was born and bred in Singapore. And after 2 years of marriage, like, we decided to have kids. So now we have like a wonderful three-year-old who's also feisty and super adorable in some sense.
Yeah. Okay, and just in case you are deceived by her name, there is no Japanese ancestry in her whatsoever. 100% full-blooded Chinese?
Yes, full-blooded. Okay. Yes. I grew up actually going to cabs, and then the taxi driver actually asked me like, oh, English? You speak English? And I'm like, yes, I do. Yeah, so I get it even without like introducing my name. I have been mistaken to be like Korean or Japanese.
All right. Yeah. By your looks.
Probably by the eyes. Like, I think like the slits maybe.
Well, today we're going to call you the interracial couple. What were, you know, the maybe initial or the most difficult challenges that you faced as an interracial couple?
When we were thinking about this, to be honest, we didn't really face that big a challenge, but then perhaps there were some racist comments, maybe. Like, I think more towards like Jason, because like my family can be quite racist. Not like openly, but they were like, you know, make very subtle comments that I think he brushes it off. But like to me, it's like, wait, what? I'm the one that gets more offended for him. Like, even though he's like pretty okay with it. I think maybe one of it was that, like, by my dad, when he wanted to marry me, then my dad actually asked him, like, are you marrying my daughter for PR or like, do you genuinely love her?
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought that's a joke, right? Yeah. But only then when I went and I spoke and I understood there's actually cases like this that have happened in the past.
Yeah.
And then I understood that's like where the dad is coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So he knew he was assured that you're not scammed.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fair enough. I mean, as a father, he's concerned about his daughter. And that's a very good question to ask.
Yeah.
So why not?
Sounds like you're going to ask your daughter's future husband this very same question when it comes to her turn.
I'll be stalking her for the first few dates, I guess.
He's probably going to be one of those like fathers that like jack themselves up to like intimidate the like future son-in-law.
Make sure to put an air tag on her.
So it sounds like when you both, because I understand you met online and you already knew that you were, you know, of a different race, right?
Yeah.
So that was not a surprise. I mean, it's not like, you know, you see each other, you know, in person for the first time. Like, oh, no.
Yeah. That's true.
So did the challenges kind of surface only like with, I don't know, the extended family, community?
So for myself, what I can say is, for some reason, I was attracted to Chinese girls. Yeah. And this is the truth. And then
maybe we'll not ask why.
Yeah. And then when I knew I had this liking for Chinese girls and then I like Mariko, I think it's very important your mindset and how you approach things, because you should be mindful about you're going to try Chinese food more. You can't just be stuck to Indian food, because that's one of the most important things, because when you're going for dates, right, she want to eat Jap and she might want to eat Korean barbecue. You can't say, I want to eat my curry all the time, right? Indian cuisine also has a lot of varieties, but I think one of the things we always enjoy the most is eating Jap food or KBBQ. Or after getting married, eating mala was a weekly thing for us.
Okay, did you already eat these cuisines before meeting her?
Not as extensively as before meeting Mariko.
No, I think mala was the first time, like, only after we dated.
Yeah,
and then he, like, cried, like, the first time that he ate mala.
Because it was too spicy
Something I need to make sure I always explain to people, they have the wrong impression. They say, hey, but Indians should be very good with spices, what? So I said, Indians are good with food cooked with a lot of spices, not spicy food.
Like flavor, it's hot flavor.
Yeah, it's not flavor. Yeah, okay. It's different. So the mindset about trying different food is important. And you should also be a little thick skin, I think, sometimes when people spill out some kind of subtle racist comments, or, you know, sitting in a house and then they just speak Chinese, right, and not able to converse at all. You should still be able to put up a smile and then wait till the turn comes when they realize he's there, and then they translate that for you in English.
There, I mean, it's the same when I hang out with like his friends and family.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Even with my friends, sometimes when they hang out, my three close friends are all from Chennai, from India. And sometimes they might just derail and start talking something in Tamil. She might also feel the same. So I think that is,
I'm quite an expert, you know, in trying to understand the conversation.
Yeah.
Despite it being in Tamil.
So I do tell my friends, I give them a disclaimer, be very careful if you're going to share something in Tamil, she can catch.
No, because the language itself, like, they incorporate a lot of English inside also. So, like, I guess I can understand the context, like, based on certain, like, English words they, like, slip in.
So you were made to marry an Indian then.
Yeah. No, but like, I mean, honestly, like, what helped also, like, in our relationship was that, like, number one, I think both of us were in the
Christians.
Same religion.
So
then that, like, helped to, I guess, eliminate one of the barriers that we would encounter.
Yeah, because if you're married, if it's a Hindu, Indian, right, I think it can just get very, very complicated, because you need to check with your astrologers, the stars are aligned, there's something called the caste system, that might really complicate. And if it doesn't align even in one aspect of it, then the family will be totally against it.
So that kind of helped.
Yeah,
but I like what you said about the food.
Yes.
I always open thought that food. You know, I should marry an Indian man when I was younger, just because I love spicy food and curry, right? Anyway, my husband is pure Chinese. But this is good to take note of, because I think sometimes we take it for granted. And even when we talk about cultural differences, it can come in many forms. I mean, I'm glad that you also brought up that, you know, there are certain things that we can look out for or try to find similarities. And faith could be one of them that can help bridge any cultural differences. So it sounds like it bridged, at least for both of you, that cultural difference. But the daily living, or how was it like, especially with your parents?
The early years of marriage are filled with unique challenges and opportunities for growth. What happens after saying, I do? At the Connect to Just Married workshop, you will gain practical tools to work through differences and conflicts and learn ways to keep the romance alive. If you have been married for 5 years or less, this workshop is for you. Get more information at www.family.org.sg/E2JustMarried.
So we stayed with Mariko's parents after you got married during the COVID time. when we're waiting for our house to get ready. It was very normal for me. I mean, they'll have breakfast, you have your own space there, and then they will not interfere and ask you questions as per se, and then you can talk if you want to talk to them, and they're pretty chill. So I didn't have a struggle. So those were all blessings for me that they didn't make my life difficult. And I think that's how my relationship grew with them. So it grew to a point like when we wanted to ask for advice, we'll just go sit next to them in their bedroom and just casually have a conversation. I won't feel like, oh, it's my in-laws. You go and talk. I don't want to talk. I love Chinese New Year.
Before we got married.
Before we got married. Because you get to collect a lot of money, right?
Okay.
But after we got married, then
you have to give money now.
Yeah, he hated it.
Yeah. They totally, I thought they will still give us, taking young parents and all, but they totally just cut it off. Like, I mean, I totally understand the practice that once you get married, you don't get money. Jokes apart, I think I get to also meet the extended family because the entire family meets over the 3 days, the father's side, the mother's side. You get to connect and say hello and you get to know who's who and how they're related. And it's very nice. And another thing I picked up dating Michael is mahjong. I love playing mahjong. And her grandmother taught me mahjong. So it was quite an addiction for me at some point in time. Like our weekends were just burning with mahjong games back to back.
Okay, so you're almost Chinese now, not just Singaporean.
Yes, he initiates a lot of Chinese food. Even when I try to say like, oh, let's have Indian tonight, he's like, no. But how about this Chinese like restaurant that just opened? Let's try that.
I mean, why don't we even just share what we just ate for lunch? I mean, we had Hunan cuisine. I love Hunan cuisine. It's very nice, the taste and the flavor.
Okay, no objections. I like it too. But Mariko, was it similar? So Jason's parents live in Chennai, right?
Yep.
And your first visit to Chennai would have been before you got married, or they came down to meet you?
They came down
to meet like my family and I. But then for the wedding itself also, we had like a ceremony in India as well. Yeah, I think that was the first time that I went to Chennai to actually see like his family house and like the extended family and everything. And whenever we go back, it feels like a Chinese New Year all over again. We would have to go and meet like different relatives, even like the extended family. Even like when we go to his church also, because his parents attend two different churches, then we would have to go to two different churches. And everybody in the church is like their family like that. So we would have to make time in the church itself to meet and talk to everybody. Even our wedding ceremony, it felt like, you know, the like how the Malays have their wedding ceremony where the couple's on the stage and the guests just come over to like greet the couple, right? The Indian like wedding ceremony that we had was exactly like that. So we had to stand on the stage for like 2-3 hours just greeting all the guests that like would come by like and have like small talks with us, exchange like their blessings in that sense. Yeah, so I think that was an experience. I was wearing my like high heels, and then like at the end of the night I was just like, I cannot wear it anymore, I need to sit down, I need to take it off and like hide under like the lehenga that I was wearing or so. So I'm so glad that the lehenga was like long enough so that it covered my feet, not then it would have been considered disrespectful. And just suddenly like I lost 3 inches maybe, and he's so tall, so the drop yeah, it's very obvious.
Were you prepared for that? Or
I mean, they tried to brief me about it. They do try their best. Like, his family really tried to tell me what to expect. But the length and the extent of it is also something that I don't think you can actually prepare yourself for. It can be very overwhelming and tiring as well. So every time before we go to India, then, like, we'll have maybe, like, 2 or 3 weeks of, like, prep work. I would consider it where, you know, he would tell me, okay, what are things to expect, the mindset that we should be going into the trip and like how we should navigate through the different days and the entire trip as well. On my end, I felt like the first time that I went with my daughter after she was born, that was quite overwhelming, I guess, for me. And then also very stressful.
Were you briefed before that first trip with your daughter?
I don't think it was that much of briefing. I think we learned after the first trip what kind of conversations we needed to have, what kind of like prep work we needed to do. Each trip gets better and better with more communication. Yeah, more okay, so experience.
So pre-trip briefing is necessary.
Yes.
I think it depends on the personality of the person. I think for Mariko, briefing is essential. Especially because, again, it's a very sensitive situation, right? You're going and seeing your parents after like about 6 months or 1 year. So there's expectations that they might have seeing their son. And then your wife has expectations that you must take care of them So how do you balance these two aspects of it? And so it's very important that you brief them, then you try to have those offline chats with your mom and dad separately, asking them and to manage certain things in a certain way. Then they will ask, why should we do that? And then you explain to Mariko, and then she's like, why should we do this? And I think the most challenging part was the mealtime.
Yes, I was going to bring that up too.
The reason why is, in general, in India, we always eat 1 hour, all the meals later than...
Not 1 hour.
Or even 2 hours. For example, here, dinner time even starts at 6. There, when I used to grow up, dinner time earliest was 8:30 or 9:30.
Yeah. 9:30.
Yeah. So for them, when I say it's dinner time and they came here to meet Mariko, I say, okay, now it's dinner. We're going to go to Mariko's house. But then my mom like, but I just had my evening tea. Dinner has to be around 8:30. I can't eat now at 6:30. Yeah. So it's the same thing when they came to India. Mariko was like,
now
I'm hungry. I'm breastfeeding, you know. Kiona is hungry. But then my mom is like, the food is not ready yet. It's not yet dinner time. I'm trying to do it a little earlier, 7:30. But she's like, no, but it's 6:30 already. So I think nap time, sleep time is very essential. And sometimes I think in Singapore, the mindset is if you say 6:30, it's 6:30, 6:35. Yeah. That's how it is. In India, you say 6:30. 6:30 can be up to 6:45, like that. 5 minutes can be 10-15. It can be a little like around the corner kind of thing. So yeah. I think those were things were kind of a challenge. I was trying to make people. But I think my parents have really onboarded very well.
Mm.
And they know how to manage things. And because last year, just Kiona and myself, we both went. And then they were very hands-on in supporting and helping. As how we as parents also journey and evolve with the kid, our parents also evolve and grow because maybe they're just a bit rusty from those two or three decades of experiencing that. Once they get used to it, I think they're back to normal also to how to support.
So after 5 years, it's almost like running like a smooth machine.
Smoother. I mean, there's still things that we cannot like anticipate. So there will be like, you know, those back and forth, but pretty satisfied where it is now, yeah. I guess.
I mean, you can't expect all the stars to align the way you want. But for us, I think each of our parents have their own moody days or their own bad days. And we are okay to accommodate that. We are happy to. And all of us are human at the end of the day. We have our good and bad days. So we just understand that they are family. They are our loved ones.
Mm.
And we try to adjust when we have to. We give in. And then when we want to voice it out, we just voice it out.
Mm. Are there any specific cultural traditions or practices that have kind of evolved from either of your backgrounds that you've chosen that, hey, we need to have this in our interracial home?
I think one thing my mother keeps stressing on from the time we had Kiona, even from when we got married, is to make sure that we have family prayer. This is not a Indian cultural thing, but it's more of my family important tradition that we always do. Like we have family time, we read the Bible, and we literally kneel down and pray. That's how it's brought up. So my mom always said that try to read the Bible and pray, physical Bible. Not that's the app. So that's something that we couldn't do very well for a while. But then now, like, we're pretty consistent with Kiona, our daughter, to a point that even if you forget or if you're late and we just rush her to sleep, she'll say, Daddy, we're not reading the Bible today. So we're reading the Bible and we're praying and we're praying for each other. We give her also opportunity to pray in whatever way she can pray. And she's pretty good. I mean, she prays for all of us. So I think very important, family prayer.
Mm. What's the best thing, like, maybe of your own culture that after being married to someone from another culture, you know, it causes you to appreciate it? Because it almost sounds like Jason likes Chinese New Year perhaps even more than Mariko. I don't know.
No, that's not true. During Chinese New Year, there's always a point of contention of like, why do we need to go to so many people's houses? And we'll meet them all in like one house or so what? Why do we need to make that like special trip down this specific person's house? We already saw them yesterday already. Tomorrow also need to see them again. The next day also see them again. Why? Why so many times? So there'll be this kind of comments. But I do think that like he's also slowly embracing the idea of, you know, having a family-centric belief that it's not just a once-off thing. Throughout the whole year, so I try to meet up with like, my cousins also to build that bond so that it's not a touch-and-go kind of relationship.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's something that I think like we're still working through and getting to understand and embrace also in our own like family and making it a point to extend it beyond like the three of us. Yeah.
I think this would be a good point to address this question. In each podcast, we usually would address a frequently asked question that couples have about marriage. And today's question is from a fiancé. So my fiancé's family is traditional Chinese and has laid down many customs and expectations for our upcoming wedding. causing some tension and disagreements in the planning process. While we wish to give our elders respect, we also have our preferences as to how a wedding should be like. How can I help them to understand our own preferences and position?
Well, that's a great question. We got married at St. Andrew's Cathedral. We were thinking initially what kind of a marriage that we wanted to have. We jotted down like few things that how we wanted our marriage to be, who to invite, why do you want to do certain things, and how the order of service needs to happen for the wedding. I think certain things, my parents were saying, can we do something like the Indian tradition? I think nothing came from Mariko's side because they were pretty sure they're fine as far as the wedding is happening.
I don't think my parents knew like tradition.
Yeah. For us, I think I had to explain to my mom certain things. How, like, for example, in India, the wedding usually happens in the evening. It happens like from 4 to 6 and followed by the reception. But here it happened on a Saturday morning. So I explained to them why they do it on Saturday mornings and then what is the order of service, why they do different aspects of the service. So I think one thing that we did a little different from the usual weddings here is we had Mariko to wear something called a tali. Which is according to the Indian tradition, which is a kind of, instead of a wedding ring, they put something like a kind of a gold necklace, which symbolizes the same thing what the ring symbolizes, which is love, being together, and also forever supporting each other. So I think that is something that my mother requested, can you please have this? And my parents made the gold tali in India, and they got it blessed by the pastors there in the church, and they brought it here. So that's something that we did. One of the main reasons why we wanted to have a bigger space, we were able to get cathedral and accommodate more people, is because we wanted to invite a lot of non-Christians to our wedding and experience. And then we were able to have that opportunity to do missions during our wedding service.
Yeah, but I think in order to, I guess, address this question is probably to maybe align with your partner about like your expectations for the wedding first, and then sit down with both sides of the family to share your opinion of what kind of marriage you envision, and then work through like what can be worked out from like, you know, each side's expectations. Maybe it can, you know, be accommodated, then why not make it less tiring and less stressful for everybody? Because at the end of the day, like a marriage, a wedding ceremony is supposed to be like a fun and joyous kind of experience. So if you have so many points of like contention, then imagine like your life ahead that will be even more stressful and more tiring. So if you can lose like a small battle to win the war, why not?
So where you can accommodate, but basically you need to bring everybody together.
You try to bring them, because I think it also depends on individuals, because there are certain individuals who would say, this is one time thing that happens in my life and it has to be the way I want it to be. And then there are certain couples who would say, okay, let's just accommodate this because my parents wanted to accommodate so that they're also happy, we're also happy. So I think at the end of the day, what kind of a person you are. But I think you should try your best to come in between so that you're able to somehow accommodate your parents, or at least help them to understand why you do not want something to happen. Or are you able to accommodate certain traditions? I mean, accommodating traditions sometimes I think is wonderful, because that's how you embrace your partner's culture, right? I embrace the gate crash thing.
That Chinese wedding day.
It was one kind of an experience that I would always remember with all the chilies and having to pay a lot of money to get inside the house.
I think because at the end of the day, from my understanding of this, is you are getting married to a person that you love and that you want to journey on the rest of your life with. For me, I don't see marriage as something that I would ditch like halfway if it gets tough and stuff, right? So I would want to work things out no matter what. And if, like, you know, an obstacle of having your parents bring in their opinion, if it's something that, you know, it's so minor, you just look past, why not look past it? Like, if it's just maybe, you know, having your gown to be a certain gown instead of one that you, like a heart-shaped sweetheart line thing, you know, and then your in-laws want it to be more covered up. If you can get past it, just live with it. And then next time you want to dress up, you dress up however you want. Yeah, that kind of like, I guess, philosophy that I want to embrace. But then if it's, for example, I guess if they want like a grander hall, right? Because they want to accommodate more guests. If that's out of your budget, you have to put your foot down and say like, that cannot work because we can't afford it. And you have to speak up, because if you don't do it before your marriage, when will you actually do it? And if you're not going to support your partner through this whole beginning phase, then in the future, it's just going to get harder.
I love that. Yeah, speak your mind. I don't know how it is in Indian families, but I think in many Asian cultures, we don't quite speak our mind. We kind of assume that you know what we expect and you should deliver it. Yeah.
But the Indian culture is like that.
Oh, yeah. Also, huh? So see, she has certain things in common, right? But you know, this whole thing about when you come together to talk things through, people have to speak their minds. Otherwise, you know, we're just second guessing and it's a bit difficult also to accommodate. But I just love the point about how as an individual and also as a couple, we do need to kind of balance things up a bit and remember that we are in for the long game. I do love it when you say that, you know, if it's something that we can turn a blind eye to for the larger win, we should just do it. Mm. Yeah, so with that, I hope this is enough tips for our guest that has asked this question and they do make it, you know, down the aisle successfully. And have, you know, that celebrative, joyous wedding occasion that Mariko, you talked about. All right. That's actually all we have time for today. So thank you so much, Jason, Mariko, for us just so candidly sharing about your lives, your story, you know, your relationship with us and how you have blended two families across the miles. Do you have any last parting words for our listeners?
Yes. What I would say is, I think you heard this a lot and I would just like to stress on this aspect of as a couple, as a partner, or as an individual, or even as a parent, I think not always every season has to happen the way it has to happen. Sometimes we just plan it so well, we structure it so well, and we want to do it like this. But I think there are some bad days or things that don't happen the way it wanted to. I would just encourage everybody that it's just one of those bad days and just hope that things would get better. Just don't get disheartened and say, this is not working the way we're bringing up our daughter, or this is not working the way we're trying to work things out as a couple. Sometimes just take a step back, look at the bigger picture and see what can be done, or observe and see what could be done better the following day. Mm. And just don't give up. Keep communicating. Yeah. Communication is key.
Yeah, that's very hopeful. Mm. This too shall pass.
Mm. Yeah, that's
yes, right. Yes, it's true. Every phase is just a phase. You will get past it and then you'll miss it.
Not the difficult ones, but...
Oh, yeah. You learn and treasure those as well.
Yes, but I think that is a very hopeful note on which we end. And so with that hopeful note, we usually end each podcast with a couple challenge for our listeners to do and share with each other. Whether or not you're with your spouse, you can always share this and do this challenge with him or her. Take a few minutes to think through and discuss, maybe even write down a family tradition. It may not be because you're from different races or cultures, by virtue of fact that you represent different families. But what is a family tradition that is important to each of you and that you might want to continue incorporating into your family? Yeah, so have a little chat about that. And that's all we have for today. We hope you found our episode helpful and encouraging. Do share this podcast with a friend who might also benefit from it. And for more marriage resources, do check out our latest articles at family.org.sg. Thank you for tuning in and don't forget to take care of yourself and your spouse.